Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Maybe I'm the only one out there. Could be. Genius is not recognized in the moment. They all come around on me later. We all come around. You're like, wait a minute, that didn't make any sense. This guy's, he's running the okey-doke.
SI's Russ Dellinger.
By the way, just looking at, breezing over my bracket, what a disaster, my God. I mean, I'm guessing everybody's looks fairly bad, but this is just, this is like beyond, it's just terrible, man.
And SI's Pat Forty.
This is not a car dealership, but I will say that if I have a demonstrative work product, I average 18 points and 10 rebounds a game. Hey, come at me, and let's talk about what I can get.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and the Final Four is set at just as predicted. You know, we taped an episode. It got technical problems or something. It never got released, but I know we all had FAU.
Yeah, we nailed
Miami,
it.
Miami. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. San Diego State and UConn. I think that was definitely, yep. I mean, who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. Who didn't see this coming?
For sure.
FAU will play San Diego State.
Yeah.
And Miami will play UConn. And I guess what constitutes the varsity game. You know, they always got to pick a game. First Final Four ever without a 1, 2, or 3 seed. UConn is the top seeded team at 4. It is the, we have 3 first time Final Four participants. Florida Atlantic, Miami, and San Jose State have never been. UConn obviously has been. This is their 6th appearance. They've won it 4 times. And this is the first time we've had 3 new participants since 1970. Ooh. When New Mexico State, Jacksonville State, and St. Bonaventure showed up and UCLA just laughed.
Yeah.
Said, okay, we're good. Let's go. No, nothing against those teams. And then also, interestingly, we have 3 teams from non-Power 5 conferences, if a conference at all, if they're even playing stuff. So only Miami of the ACC has arrived. We'll see what San Diego State does in the future. We also know that the American, I think quite rightfully, Oresco, their commissioner, wants to retire the term Power 5, and that's fine. It's not applicable in the future playoff era, but UConn and FAU really don't care about football. San Diego State kind of, Miami definitely does, but it's certainly interesting that the football schools are not running amok when there was a chance. The thought all year was, oh, there comes Alabama. They're finally caring about basketball. They're going to win this too. And we can get to Alabama. We'll also get to, we'll get to all these. We'll get to Charlie Baker's proposal, NCAA president. We'll talk a little bit of our Jack Swarbrick interview last week, and might even do some football here. So, but Pat, I'll start with you. Thoughts just generally on this most unlikely of Final Fours?
Well, let's start with this. Which one of these is not like the other? Boca Raton, San Diego, Coral Gables, Storrs. Gee, we know. We've got 3 schools from like unbelievable beach locations, and then we have UConn from one of the grimmest college towns on the face of the planet.
But let me stop you right here. Hold on. Let's just go right with this. Now, where would you most want to live? Let's each take a vote. Boca Raton, Miami, San Diego, or Storrs. So if you see, go on Storrs, go Storrs. If you like a lot of good foliage, the others cannot compete with foliage.
I like the palm tree foliage. How about that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What would you choose?
Well, if I have an unlimited amount of money, give me San Diego, period. I'm nothing wrong with South Florida, but there's everything right about San Diego.
Yeah. It doesn't get muggy in San Diego.
I would go with South Florida myself, but you know me, San Diego gets a little too chilly, you know, at night.
Oh, boy.
I spent a summer once sleeping in a garage. in San Diego. Yeah. No, it's not. No, it's the summer. So, all right, let me say San Diego, perfect weather. Like, just that's it. There's no like, it's like Miami's horrible in August and July and June. Man, I cover those Miami Heat championships. Like, you walk from the hotel to the arena like three blocks, and it was like, you forget it. If you're in Boca Raton, you are loaded.
Yes, you are.
Miami, way more exciting, way more interesting. Different neighborhoods, culture, all that. But if you're in Boca, you are rich. Mm-hmm. So there's that. You know, I like the seasons. Yeah, I can't say I'm taking stores, though. I'll go San Diego.
No, you know, nobody. Sean Anderson, you're not taking stores, are you?
But a huge, like, you know, you're partying with Miami's more exciting, but up at Boca, you're partying with, like, Tiger and Trump, right? You're just like, as your neighbors.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. You get up there, Palm Beach, West Palm, Boca.
Yeah, it gets weird. A lot of old people, a lot of, like, you know, facelifts. I don't know. And then Dusty Nip
and Tuck.
A lot of Nip and Tucks and Brooklyn accents. And I don't know. That's a good question. Great thing. All right, go back to your points, Matt.
Back to my point. Look, I mean, it is a completely wild Final Four. Nobody was picking these teams. Tons of fresh faces and new terrain and everything. But it fits thematically with this season in college basketball because it has been one of those years that people have been saying since November, December. Is like, is anybody really good? You know, is there any powerhouse teams? And no, this is the season distilled to its final essence here of, you know, yeah, give us the Conference USA champion and the Mountain West champion and a Miami, you know, which has had a good program, but is, you know, like the ninth school you think of when you think of basketball in the ACC. So, you know, I imagine the ratings will be bad. There may not even be any ratings for the FAU-SDSU game, but that's okay. These are interesting teams. These are fun teams. And this is the season this is the way this season should have ended, frankly, given the way it went most of the year.
It felt like we were due for one of these, especially after last year, right? We had all the four blue bloods, Kansas and Duke and North Carolina and who am I leaving off?
Villanova.
Villanova. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's crazy that from one year away, we have basically four blue bloods, and now we have this grouping. I was reading Pat's column today on it, and I don't know whether to, as you wrote, like Pat, like I don't know whether to look at this as just this one-off kind of year, or is this something, some kind of trend? It's hard to say it's some kind of like trend or some kind of NIL or portal reason behind it, because just a year ago we had all the powers. So I don't know what to make of it, but it sure is incredible when you look at some of the stats to it, the three first timers, the no one or two or three seed. It's pretty incredible.
I don't think you can come to the conclusion. I think that'd be, like you said, I mean, you have Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and Villanova a year ago. Yeah, it'd be ridiculous to say, oh, look what this trend is, because you could say last year's trend. So I don't think it says that the transfer portal and NIL and all of that is how you get to the Final Four or allows it. But I don't think you can say that's not how you're getting there. I'm saying it wrong, but like you can't sit there and say, oh, small schools can't make it. Yeah. That's what I'm getting.
Right.
All right. I'm not sitting there saying, well, from here on out, just shake up the lottery balls and see who the heck comes out. And any team can follow this path of getting it done. I don't think you can say that, but you certainly can't sit there and go, well, see, with the transfer portal and the NIL, only the blue bloods are going to get good.
Yeah. Right.
That's all. So it's more wide open, but that doesn't assure anything. The strength is still with the programs that historically have strength. It's just in this case, it didn't happen. You talk Miami, the big thing was, well, they went out and got Nigel Pack from Kansas State, who, you know, I don't know what, coincidentally also made a Final Eight without Nigel Pack. I mean, the life wallet, quote unquote, purchase, if you will, was Nigel Pack. He had 15 in the game. The reason they won was Jordan Miller. We thought this tournament might be dominated by Brandon Miller. It was dominated by Jordan Miller. Yeah. Got the wrong Miller.
Literally didn't miss yesterday.
Yeah, a phenomenal game. One of the best Elite Eight performances, like up there with Dwayne Wade against Kentucky in whatever year that was, Christian Laettner against Duke, like one of the great Elite Eight games, Jordan Miller. But she said, well, they got Nigel Pack. Yeah, they needed him because they really only play like five guys.
Yeah.
I think they, you know, I think nobody else had more than 10 minutes. I don't know. They barely play anybody. It's all starters. So, yeah, they needed another guy. But it's not like Miami went out and bought 10 dudes.
Right.
So I don't know what you can make out of any of it other than, you know, clearly you're not screwed if you're out of it. And, yeah, you can make the Final Four as well as ever from Conference USA, Mountain West, or obviously the Big East. No one's surprised. You. UConn just basically got back. They hired a great coach, and they got back in the Big East, and they're back. And they aren't leaving. So that's a blue blood to me.
Well, one of the through lines, right, with the four teams left is like a fifth year senior, right? Don't every one of them have like some kind of contributor, fifth or even sixth year senior. And I don't know if that's a COVID related like extra year, Pat, or is that just like a lot of them the COVID year?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Guys that, you know, have played four full years and getting that fifth year. And everybody's got at least one of them. Some of them have more. I mean, like San Diego State's team is ancient. You know, they've got a lot of fifth year guys. And it's funny, you know, Dan, yes, to your point, right? There are some NIL people in here. There's some transfers. But San Diego State has been getting transfers for like a decade. They were the first school to really be like, hey, we will take, you know, even before you get the immediate eligibility, but we will take guys and build teams a lot that way. But like Florida Atlantic, most of their guys have spent their whole career, or at least the last several years, at Florida Atlantic. They may have played 1 year somewhere else and then gone there. That's a pretty homegrown team. So is UConn. So, you know, there may be a guy here and a guy there, but this is not one of those things where you can just chalk it up and say, ah, portal, NIL. Now, Dan, to your point, you're absolutely right that there's more opportunity, I think, out there for more schools. And this is the kind of thing that you would think would really kind of galvanize the hopes and ambitions of a lot of other Mountain West schools. Conference USA, FAU is going to the American Athletic Conference. I know, you know, just I heard a lot of angst from people at longtime basketball schools like Dayton, VCU, St. Louis, like, man, we got to get there. We got to do that too. You know, VCU did do it, but you know, other places where they've always been pretty good at basketball and cared about basketball, they don't have football. And I think that these kind of runs might at least get their hopes up and probably get their ambition up in terms of, we need a good coach, we need facilities, we need players.
So just considering Miami, John Ruiz, life wallet, he steps in, you know, and he's actually done this, but let's say if John Ruiz had just said, I'm going to donate $50 million to Miami and we're going to build the most opulent facilities and we're going to pay the best. They may have the best coach. I mean, the guy, Jim Larrañaga, amazing. Two Final Fours now. One at George Mason, one at Miami. Both as five seeds are up. I think he was, 11 or a 10?
11 at George Mason, yep.
Yeah, this was not a guy who, no offense to like Roy Williams, but you get the Kansas job and then are handed Carolina, right? I mean, you earn Carolina, but you know, right? This is, you know, Larrañaga's got it done. So maybe they have it, but if they just said, well, we pay our head coach $8 million a year. We just replaced our $30 million facility with a $50 million facility. We invested and you did that passive dollar that went to bricks and mortar and salaries of athletic departments and coaches. He would be hailed as a college sports hero. That's the system they want. By taking less money, being cutting edge, being innovative, taking a look at the deals. Let's say, oh, look, maybe they don't win it with Nigel Pack. They really don't have any play. They only have five guys, really. He goes out and says, well, I'm gonna do this. And even if you posit the idea that the criticism is correct, why would we criticize this? Like, he spent less money and went with an active dollar and added a guy. Even if you, like, I don't even know if all that, I'm not necessarily saying all that's true or that's why they're there, but that's the criticism of Miami. Like, well, they just were smarter. Like, oh, well, look, we built this completely unnecessary basketball facility with 14 gyms and every guy's got his own weight room and there's 15 waterfalls and, you know, oh my God, what a hero of, you know, they'd write him up in the NCAA news as a hero. But it's like, oh, that John Ruiz, oh, his life wall, it's Final Four. It's like, he just sat there, was like, I'll spend a fraction of this and get an immediate return. I don't see the problem. But
yeah, no,
Ross, Pat, I don't care.
It's not a problem. I think there's people that are just immediately recoiling. I jokingly said, you know, this is Miami's first Final Four, Jim Larranaga's second, also John Ruiz's first. It's fine. I mean, that's the way this game is being played right now. The only sticking point is he breaking the NCAA rules in the method in which he's recruiting players and paying them basically an incentive to come in? I'm not sure it's an enforceable rule. I'm not sure it should be an enforceable rule, but that's the rule. And that's where the NCAA tried to get him on the Cavender twins. They didn't get him on Nigel Pack, so... it is what it is, man. This is players will be compensated when the compensation comes, in what form, as a recruiting inducement or otherwise. That's the sticking point. That's the point of threading the needle. But it would have been pretty funny. Miami, the women's team, lost in the regional final. And if they would have made it, I would have actually paid to get on a private plane with John Ruiz and fly back and forth from Houston to Dallas between games to see the Canes in Houston and the Lady Canes, or the women Hurricanes in Dallas, but they didn't get there.
I listened to some Miami sports talk radio, especially the Dan Le Batard show, and they talk about John Ruiz quite a bit. And there's always a argument, kind of a running argument on the show with the people on the show between them about how much influence, you know, an impact John Ruiz have on this basketball season, on this basketball team. You know, there's some on the show and probably some fans down there that believe, you know, he's owed most of the credit and he's basically like general manager and, you know, he'll get a championship ring sort of thing. And then there are others who believe that it's more so Jim Larranaga and in the program in general, and it's been kind of heading to this trajectory. I don't know where to put it. I don't know how much to give him, but certainly I think Dan brings up a great point. You know, the old method was donate all this money and build facilities and pay coaches all this money, and now it's you know, pay players all this money. And it's funny, I was on the phone with somebody kind of in the NIL world last week, and he said it's still too soon. You know, we're only 20 months into NIL to really know what the future is of the collectives and how they'll work and the sustainability. But he said it is going to depend on the success on the field and on the court with some of these programs that have big NIL money. And Miami's obviously one of them. And if the football team kind of comes in around a form, then you could see there, you know, others seeing that, right? You saw Tennessee football this past year, which has a pretty notoriously well-run and good collective. And we talked about it in the show before. There's the USC, you know, out there with the same. You know, Lincoln went out there and they have great NIL and they turned over their roster. But then you have the other examples, obviously plenty of the others that haven't reached that point, like at Texas A&M. So it'll be interesting, but this leaves an imprint, I think, on a lot of people who are in the NIL space are watching this, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can make a drawn out conclusion other than this isn't necessarily just the end. I also think, Pat, like you mentioned, the Daytons of the world that sit there and say, boy, we really love basketball here. Dayton, I mean, anything's possible, but Dayton is less like, let's put it this way. It's a lot harder for Dayton to raise $50 million and come up with a facility that's as good as Kentucky or whoever has the best facility at this point. That's an arms race that they are not equipped to win. But if it's $400,000 in a year, and I don't know that these numbers won't go down, not hop higher, but whatever, the deal was 2 years, $800,000 for Nigel Pack. And again, this is a guy who scored 15. He was not the star of the show, but let's say that's the price. Well, they can raise $400,000 for a year.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it doesn't take that much for these schools that care about basketball to say, well, we can raise this. What we can't compete is we're not in that league. We don't have this. We're not, you know, we're not a big state school. We're a small private school in a mid-sized city. You know, I'm just using Dayton as your example, but that, you know, that's kind of the thing. And basketball, you can make some moves. Football, obviously harder because you just need so many people. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, again, San Diego State, you got, there's nothing, there's, you know, there's no reason San Diego State can't, they got rich guys. So maybe they get in on something like this. Now they fall, you know, I don't know. It's just, I don't know what the impact is going to be, but you can certainly see the path where someone says, hey, let's spend our money this way rather than try to fight a losing battle of facilities.
Yeah.
Because the big schools are always going to have better facilities. But when you're all of a sudden 21 years old and you're going, I want to get coached, and someone will make it not, and maybe it's not, I can outbid you by, you know, it's you don't necessarily have to just outbid somebody. You just have to give them enough that it makes sense to be like, yeah, I'll move here.
Right. Yeah. And that's, look, there's one thing we've seen. Players are very willing to move, especially in basketball. And they are. They're looking for playing time, looking for a little compensation, looking for a pathway to the league. You can get to the league from a lot of different places. You can get compensated a lot of different places, and you get playing time a lot of different places. And I do think the more schools have success like this, the more that does at least open the minds and probably the wallets of people to say, hey, gosh, Florida Atlantic's in the Final Four. Let's go. Let's see what we can do. By the way, I was wondering while we were talking here, is there that much difference between John Ruiz and Sam Gilbert? It's just we know a lot more about John Ruiz than what he's done. Sam Gilbert was the benefactor for many UCLA players back in the days when they had a dynasty rolling.
Well, that's the thing with Mr. Ruiz, right? He doesn't hide himself. He's not quiet. Mm-hmm. He likes to, for obviously he enjoys you know, talking to the media, and he enjoys being involved with the press, being in the spotlight a little bit. And you know, it's very Miami of him, right? It's very Miami he carries with him the whole Miami persona in a lot of different ways. And as they say down there, hashtag because Miami, you know, and that's what he is. So gotta love it.
Yeah. It was a very pure sport until NIL.
Yes. Clean as a whistle.
Always has been.
I find this fascinating. Like, the Miami program almost got finished by not just the ridiculous FBI Southern District of New York investigation, but amongst that investigation where they turned, you know, NCAA violations into federal crimes. But they got caught up and their allegations really weren't true. It was not nearly the initial allegations that the feds laid out didn't pan out. And Miami really wasn't involved in the way, you know, they were kind of caught up in the middle of the recruitment, but they never really had anything more than, well, they were calling this guy and they're like, well, he was the AAU coach. What exactly we're going to say? You know, it wasn't Jim Larrañaga on a phone talking about a strong ass offer or this or that. And that's why in the end, Larrañaga was fine. The program went on fine. Chris Caputo, the assistant who, you know, he moved on to Georgia. Like, they didn't do anything. So, right. But they, for a, there was a dark few months there when, you know, they had their own section in the initial charging document. Like, here are the schools that were impacted. And Miami started screaming right away going, "This was, we didn't do anything." And it was kind of funny in college athletics. Like, yes, that, you know, Jim Larrañaga, huge rule breaker. But they survived that. And now here they are. Man, if I'm Larrañaga and I'm like, man, I almost got my program crushed and me out because of something we didn't do. Hell yeah, John Reese. What you got?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I think they were University 7 in the original charging document, if I remember correctly.
They were listed. Yeah. And they were listed in there. You know, it was, University in Carroll Gables, Florida, with, you know, remember they would sort of announce it.
Yeah. They'd let everybody know, and then we'd all figure it out.
14,216 students, and then you're like looking, you go. Yeah.
Call themselves the Canes. Yeah. No. This was their year by year record. Start like 2015, 25-13, 27-8, 21-12, 22-10. Boom. FBI thing hits. 14-18, 15-16, 10-17. Larrañaga right there is like, gosh, probably worried he was going to keep his job. Then last year, 26-11. This year, 29-7. So they did go through an FBI-induced dark cloud that didn't stick to them, and now they've come out the other side of it.
Yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah.
Briefly, who's going to win this thing at this point?
UConn. They're a absolute steamroller right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they are rolling. Iona, I think, maybe led them by 2 at the half or was behind by 2. And since then, they have laid to waste everyone. They end up beating Iona by 24, beat St. Mary's by 15, and that wasn't that close. Destroyed Arkansas by 23, and then beat Gonzaga into a bloody pulp by 28. So they are rolling. It's funny, like, their non-conference, they are undefeated in non-conference play, and I believe they have won every non-conference game by double figures. They had some trouble early in the Big East schedule. They got that back together, and they have been an extremely good team most of the year. So they were on the verge of being ranked number 1, like, in late December, and then they started losing. But that this has been a really good team all season, and they're on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, I would agree. That was gonna be my pick for those left, that UConn would win it all. I, by the way, just looking at breezing over my bracket, what a disaster! My God, I mean, I'm guessing everybody's looks fairly bad, but this is like beyond. It's just terrible, man. No teams in the Final Four. I got like one team in the Elite Eight. I mean, it was just terrible.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody's crushed. That Texas was my last Final Four team. They're out. So
yeah.
I liked UConn all along. I remember saying, I am right about this. I was wrong about, you know, the other three, believe me, and many, many other things. I thought Alabama would win the title, but I said all along, UConn could beat them. They beat them in the non-conference. UConn had this weird stretch where they were just awful.
Yep.
You know, they lose to Xavier, they lose to Providence, they beat Creighton, then they lose to Marquette, St. John's, Seton Hall, they beat Butler, and then they lose to Xavier. So what's that? They go 2-5.
Yeah.
But then, so before that, they were exceptional, and then after, they were exceptional. And I watched that Marquette game in the Big East semifinals, and a lot of times the best thing to do is lose in the semis.
Right.
Maybe, I think that was the semis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was the semis.
It was.
Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic game, and you're like, all right, they can, like, that's actually what you want to do is lose there. So I did like UConn. I did like UConn, but what they did to Arkansas and Gonzaga this weekend, and St. Mary's is tricky. I mean, they've not had an easy road. Iona, St. Mary's, Arkansas, Gonzaga, and these are like, I mean, you have this great system. Iona played an amazing first half of that game for a, you know, underseeded team. St. Mary's so difficult. Then all of a sudden here come Arkansas with so much talent and athletes, and then you have the veterans and the program that that doesn't lose much. It's Gonzaga, and they took all different types of teams and they beat them all. So
yeah, it was incredible. Pat just went through the scores in the NCAA tournament from them, but I just went back to look again. It's the margins in which they obliterated teams. I kept looking at that, watching that Gonzaga UConn game, just, you know, going back to the score, and God, it was like 10 points, 15 points, 20 points. And then it was like 25. And I'm thinking, all right, well, I'm turning this off. But it's, they've just mowing teams down, man. It's pretty crazy.
All right. That's the Final Four. We'd be amiss if we didn't speak about who didn't make the Final Four, namely the one we thought would win it. Everyone thought would win it. And really the story of this NCAA season, which is Alabama. Pat, you were there. They lost to San Diego State last Friday night in Louisville, and pretty disastrous game. Brandon Miller shot the ball very poorly. He had moments where he made some incredible plays, but it looked for a minute like they were going to take San Diego State out. San Diego State rallied back. Obviously the big issue is, you know, I don't think winning the national title was worth Nate Oates, you know, really trashing his reputation and having so much criticism. Same for the program, same for the university itself. You know, when you're down to debating why did Nick Saban leave the rat poison out for 2 days before he came in and said, no, it's not rat poison. You know, just a huge thing. I don't think winning a national title is worth all of that, but Sweet 16 really isn't worth all that.
Yeah.
I mean, if the goal was, well, look, we're going to win the title, so we're just doing it. And then it's like, no, we're going to get beat by a 5 seed from the Mountain West. So, Pat, your thoughts on what you saw, what the fallout, what was it like after Bama fell apart? I don't know if I'd seen so many. Everybody told the same joke online, wrong place, wrong time. Karma. I mean, it was crazy, what Alabama entailed there.
Yeah, I made the same joke in my lead of my column.
Yeah,
it's a good joke. The thought was exactly that. If you're going to mortgage everything in terms of your reputation and institutional integrity, you'd like to get further than the Sweet 16. And they didn't. They came up way, way short. They were up 9 points in the second half, and it looked like one of those times where you've just seen Alabama just scoot away from teams, and San Diego State wouldn't let it happen. And then Alabama, it was kind of like, you know, a Mike Tyson fight where you survive the knockout punch, and then he's like, oh, God, I got to box, you know, and maybe he's not going to be able to box. And the opponent's like, okay, I'm still in this. Here I come. So it was pretty shocking to see, really. But, you know, in the end all result, I don't think it became more and more clear, certainly after this game, how many people did not like what Alabama did. You know, there was an avalanche of schadenfreude, I guess you would say. And I don't think Alabama ever fully recognized how badly it alienated a lot of people with the way it handled this. Maybe they do now, but I don't think in their little, you know, vacuum of we're just going to go try to win this title and we don't care, I'm not sure they grasped kind of the extent to which they mortgaged everything in terms of how people think about them. And I think that's maybe the only justification for what they did, is they just somehow missed the big picture of what they were, you know, denying, avoiding, mitigating, rationalizing, involving Brandon Miller and Jaden Bradley and the whole program and the way they handled it. They were tone deaf and callous the whole way. And maybe now, they've lost a little bit of tone deafness and they can hear what the fallout is.
And Pat, you were there, you were mm-hmm. covering them. And I'm just curious of, what do you think you think the distraction impacted them? I mean, what, you know, this whole buzz, right? Like what, I wonder, I'm just curious of your take of being close to them, like, you know, in that world, like you are, like what kind of impact did the distraction have on the team? And do you think it had any?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know whether I can answer it accurately.
Yeah.
Because they've kind of been automatons really throughout this thing, other than when Nate Oates says something stupid, which was fairly regular. But Like, Brandon Miller never once changed demeanor, inflection, the way he looked at people was the same throughout this entire tournament. Oates, for the most part, when he answered questions, except for, again, when he came across as not grasping things, but there was never any time that you saw any visible stress, but it had to be there, right? It yeah. had to be, to a degree. I mean, you got armed security walking around Brandon Miller in Birmingham at the arena there. That's unusual. That's out of the ordinary. You know, Oates said that he had deleted all the social media apps from his phone. He wasn't reading anything, but some of the criticisms certainly had to soak in and get through, I would think. Did it have an effect? I don't know. But boy, they sure looked like a team that when San Diego State came back at them, whether it's because they just weren't used to that or whether it was because they were flipping tired from carrying all this, I don't know. But they wilted pretty quickly in the last maybe 10, 12 minutes of that game.
Yeah, San Diego State looked like one of these MMA fighters. They get rocked, and you're like, fight's over, and they get out. Like, okay, now we're fighting. Yeah. Good, I like getting smacked. And you're like, it makes no sense, but it happened. So they were tough, mm-hmm. and they really shut down the transition three. They just did not allow Alabama to get easy baskets. You know, I think initially they knew the right thing to do, and this is complete guess. Oates is he's a very convincing guy, and he somehow – talked them out into letting Miller continue to play. And that was the mistake. The fact that the president never said a freaking word says he did not, he realized that this was a terrible decision and he doesn't want his name touched with it.
Yeah.
Nobody was talking but Oates. And I think Oates, I'm not going to say Nate Oates is the worst human being on earth, that he did not care that someone, I'm not going to say that. He just was really bad at coming across with some sympathy, the way he talked. And it's not an easy thing to do. And it's not something you train for. And so I'm not giving him a pass on it. He just wasn't good at it. And it's just like, you're not hired to be like, hey, I want you to be the face of trying to express sympathy, but don't put us in legal jeopardy. But like, it's a very hard job, which is what a president of a university should do, or some administrator should do, athletic director, chancellor, what, I don't know who, you know, whoever it is, it's not the basketball coach who's like, in one sentence, is trying to say, well, it's really upset about that. And then saying, hey, did you see how well our sideline out of bound plays are terrific. You know, it doesn't lend itself to it. So they really failed on that. And I think that just made everything worse. Look, I think people understand that I'm in favor of stories. So, like, I don't necessarily take a, like, this was terrible. I do, now that it's over, I am glad in this way. And I'm not really, I don't care if Alabama made it or not. And it was a total circus up there. The other teams in the Final Four aren't having this thing overshadowed because this story was about to go to 100.
Oh, yeah.
ABC Evening News did a 3.5-minute segment the other day, like Friday, on it. In national evening news time, 3.5 minutes might as well be a 8-part documentary. Like I had already been contacted by a national cable outlet about this week. It was gonna, you know, it had seeped into, all right, this is gonna be the story. And for the other teams at the Final Four that want to like not have to be like, hey, we're here, we're a good story, to have all that. And I don't know. I mean, they went all out. They got the Bama fans to rally. I suddenly not getting inundated by Bama fans I was amazed at the number of old Alabama fans who all of a sudden became, might as well have been Brian Stevenson from Just Mercy. Like they're arguing like evidence collection and prosecutorial overreach. Like, wow, how about that? Like, this is interesting. Like, you guys get down to Montgomery and volunteer if you're really into these causes. Guessing there'll be a lot less of that interest.
Uh-huh.
Going forward, maybe there shouldn't be. But hey, if this is what inspires you, there are injustices in the world. The system is not perfect. I don't know how. It'll be very interesting to see what Oates goes forward with. Does this impact the future of this program or not? I can't see him getting another job anywhere else for at least a long time. It's funny he got the contract extension based on the idea that he was hireable. I mean, he is not hireable anywhere right now. No. And so Bama's got him. They didn't need to give him a raise, but they did. And obviously, they, at this point, if they do anything else. But the fact that Stuart Bell, the president of Alabama, never said a word about this and was conspicuously just out tells me he was well aware that this was a train wreck and he was running from it. Not standing there saying, hey, here's our case. Nobody was making the case.
No. And I do think that they missed their opportunity early on to handle this the right way. And after that, they, you know, whether they got steamrolled by Oates or whatever, they just were kind of, they had put themselves into a corner and just said, well, we're going with this and that's that. And it did. It became a bigger and bigger story the further they went. And yeah, personally, I am really glad that after writing like 8 or 9 stories on this, I can go to the Final Four and write about these other teams. I'm tired of it, but it would have been a massive story in Houston.
Oh, yeah, it would have completely captured the whole Final Four and the coverage leading up to it, I'd imagine. You know, so now there's kind of a different focus going in with them out. And I'm assuming at some point, right, Brandon Miller will announce he's leaving. I don't think all this has really impacted, right, his projections at top 2, top 3 pick.
That's interesting. I talked to several NBA scouts for a story last week, you know, and one of them flat said, this is a moral dilemma of the highest order. Like, you do not want to miss on a top 3 pick who's, you know, for off the court reasons. I mean, you don't want to miss on top 3 pick, period, but you sure don't want to have a guy who ends up, you know, doing something that's going to be really bad for your franchise. So they're going to, I mean, he will be due diligence to the nth degree going forward. But we'll see. To Dan's point, how far does this follow Alabama? All right. It will follow Brandon Miller until he, you know, assuages doubts. Whether that's in June when he gets drafted or thereafter, I don't know. But Alabama, it's not the kind of thing, with Nate Oates, it's just you don't just forget that this is the way they handled it. So.
Yeah, it may hurt recruiting. It may not. He'll certainly go in and tell parents, look, I'll stand by your kid forever.
Right.
Against anything. You can spin it the right way. But when you're consistently for 6 or 8 weeks going, well, yeah, this happened, but it didn't mean this. Or this, like, he did the, you know, we call Ray Lewis, but it doesn't mean what you think it means. We did the pat down, but it doesn't mean what you think it means. Yeah, Saban said that and let it sit for 2 days, and but it didn't mean what you think it means. You know, you're just on your heels. Just wrong place, wrong time. We didn't mean it that way. He didn't know. Why didn't he know? Well, right. You're just getting slaughtered in this. It's a losing streak PR wise. And that's why you get ahead of these things, because they snowball and stuff that you, right. There's a fourth player in the car. Well, that may not have actually been true, but it was a headline for another day, right? Probably isn't true. Well, who was in the car?
Although it is interesting. We don't know. Times
isn't back down.
Times has not taken down their story and has said they stand by their reporting. So who knows? That's a whole other thing. But you're right, Dan. The well actually of this from Alabama's standpoint has just been incredible. They have had to answer for 9 million different things that have come across bad or been bad.
That's why
speaking of the New York Times story, like, I think I want to say before the New York Times story published, the reporter Billy Witz reached out to Kai, right, the player that he said was in the car, reached out to him before the story published. I think he just said he gave him like a no comment. He didn't deny it. And then the story comes out and then he forcibly and aggressively denies it. Him, his father in Alabama. It's just, that whole saga was very weird. The whole thing, has been.
It's just right. And you have to, you can't ever be like, okay, we'll have one press conference, we're good. You just set yourself up for stuff coming in directions you cannot predict, that make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what happened there. All right. So last week we talked to Jack Schwarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, on this show. He also put out with Father Jenkins, the Notre Dame president, proposal in the New York Times. And Jack spoke with Ross on at SI.com. go back and listen to our conversation. I thought it was a good conversation. Jackson, I thought we treated him with appropriate respect. He's a very smart guy, very nice guy. And he's kind of just, you know, he had some of the things were pretty interesting. Some, you know, I still can't quite grasp what the issue is. But people wanted us to continue talking about it. Charlie Baker also talked to CBS over the weekend about some stuff. We can get to that. Ross, what was your feedback from the Schwarbrick stuff?
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. I had a lot of Jack Schwarbrick's colleagues, athletic administrators, who kind of reached out, listened to the pod, read the story, read his proposals, and agreed. You know, agreed, and were excited to see him go so aggressively with it and speak out. And so they all agreed. You know, I think there were some in the NIL space, right, that work in the NIL, within the NIL industry, the collective folks, the kind of social NIL, I don't know what you'd call them, platforms, but folks like that reached out, that found it, yeah, intriguing, thought the back and forth with Jack that we had was good on the pod, especially when we just kind of, you know, poked and prodded him, Dan, about, you know, why is this wrong? You know, why is NIL wrong? Why is paying players in this way wrong? What's the problem? Is there really a problem there? And heard from some people who said, I think, you know, is our question late in the podcast with Jack, when I asked him about, you know, can't you, you know, you, we, the administration, the NCAA world says that, you know, women's sports and Olympic sports will be impacted if you have to split revenue with football and basketball players. And I think I asked him, playing devil's advocate, you know, here, can you tell us, if you don't pay your coaches so much and you don't build these gaudy facilities, couldn't that money be used for those Olympic sports and such? And, you know, I think that is a big point, that big discussion point. So it depends on who you talk to, Dan. The bottom line is what kind of impression you're going to get from it. And that's what this whole issue is, right? It's an issue that divides people. It's fairly divisive. It's almost like everything in society these days, right? You're on one side or the other. There's no middle ground. Pick a side. You're with the athletes and pay, or you're with the administrators in control. So it depends on which side you talk to.
Yeah, I'd like to try to find a middle ground there, because I'm perfectly fine with the athletes getting paid. I think it's unrealistic to think they're going to get paid and it's not going to be recruiting inducements and pay for play. But I would like to see a national database of reported income, or reported deals at least, and stuff. I mean, we know we have an NFL rookie salary scale. We have an NBA rookie salary scale. Everybody knows what that is. That everybody knows what people are making at the pro levels. I just would like to know what people are making at the college levels. I don't think it's a problem for them to make money, but I don't think it's bad to have that knowledge at least. The amount of the opaqueness of this whole thing, I guess, is probably where I can understand the schools having an issue with it. Again, don't restrict them getting the money, but where's it coming from? How much is it? I'd like to know.
Well, Dan's going to get to it, I'm sure, in a minute, but that's big Charlie Baker's big point, right, is more transparency and a database of some sort, or a clearinghouse, something the NCAA tried to do, right, 2 years ago, and then backed down and retreated off of it because of potential, you know, I don't know if it's antitrust as much as just the private information.
No, you're right. Yeah, he said on CBS, basically, we'd like to create, this is a quote, I would call some consumer protections for families and student athletes around name, image, and likeness. I'd love to create some transparency and accountability. He is a politician, Charlie Baker. Got the buzzwords right away. Guardrails are not in here. I'd love to create some transparency and accountability around that, so that families actually know what they're getting into. And I would really like to see some sort of uniform standard contract, so that when somebody signs it, they know they're signing the same kind of agreement everybody else is signing. Charles Barkley came on and said, why are we listening? Like, don't leave this to politicians. They're all crooks. That got a lot of attention. The CBS crew completely missed the point here, though, of this story. And Pat, I'm going to you know, 100% disagree with you.
Okay. Mm.
This is not about consumer protection. This is two things. One, it is the inherent problem of the NCAA not recognizing their student athletes as adults who can fend for themselves. And until that philosophy changes, until the future is we have a partner in the student athletes, whether they become employees, whether we recognize union, or we just sit there and say, hey, have at it. We don't look at regular students and say, if you go take an off-campus job at the bar, waiting tables on the weekend, you have to register it with our bursar's office or something, right? I just wanted to say the word bursar. Is the word bursar ever used anywhere else? No idea what the word bursar office is.
I think you actually are using it correctly, so congratulations.
I might be. Mm-hmm. I think I do, but whatever. Yeah. Until they get that philosophy and say, we need a future plan that includes respect that you are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. You are allowed to have an agent. There are civil courts at your disposal. Not, we must protect you, okay?
Right.
Until they come up with that, this will never work. We need some solution, but that mindset, nanny state, patriarchy, whatever. These kids are dumb. They're gullible. They're going to get tricked. Oh my God, only we can save them. That's the inherent philosophical problem. And so they come up with this. I don't actually believe Charlie Baker believes this thing for a second, or else he has changed from a politician that campaigned and ruled on deregulation and free markets. He literally ran a free market, a think tank in Boston, who is now sitting there saying the government should be involved in writing all of your contracts and knowing every deal you make. And this is why it impacts. You can't do this. Capitalism, you have to have the ability to negotiate. You're going in for a job. You say, well, I got a couple other offers. Maybe they exist. Maybe they don't. The employer doesn't know how much money you're getting offered, and you can drive up your price. How the hell did Nate Oates, after a murder by involving one of his players, get a raise? Because there was the perception that maybe Texas would hire him. So he gets a raise. Every one of these guys. When you have to disclose how much everyone's making, then the other side knows everything. And if you're not going to collectively bargain and come up with a union deal, that's, and even then you can't do it across. People can still leave the union and go somewhere else. Like, you don't have to stay in the auto workers union. You come to them and say, hey, they're framing it as consumer protection, but what they're trying to do is claw back control over this marketplace under the idea that, well, these poor players are dumb. They're playing off of stereotypes. They're playing off of like the occasional big headline story, like Jaden Rashada. They're playing off all this lack of respect when it's inherently unfair. Whether you're trying to sell a used car or buy a car, you pretend you have other offers. You pretend you're going to go down the street to the Buick dealership, right? You have to have the ability to negotiate with the other guy not knowing, and you not knowing them. How many other candidates are there for this job? Maybe I got to take it. It's fundamental. The NCAA is trying to control everything with the wrong philosophy, and it will curb the free market for the players and what they possibly can get. But mostly it's the philosophy.
Well, I don't want a nanny state. I don't want a patriarchal, you know, talking down, treating the players as children who need to be taken care of. But a little just systemic structure is what I'm looking for. Again, like the NFL rookie salary scale. Does that mean that players
are their employees? Nanny?
Yeah, they are. So, okay, maybe we need to
make them employees. Players. You can do That's all fine. Of this.
Okay, all right. Well, then make them employees.
But
we're on the way.
They don't know what Patrick Mahomes makes from Allstate, nor should they ever have that ability to find that out. And Allstate doesn't know how much Patrick Mahomes is getting offered from Progressive. And Patrick Mahomes doesn't know how much Aaron Rodgers is making from Allstate. And everyone's got to negotiate a deal. But if you're not going to make them employees, you have zero right on this. It's intrusive. It's a lack of the fundamental right to privacy and the fundamental right. And it's based, though, even more importantly on the on this concept that we only again, we talked about it when that North Carolina field hockey player who's now the coach.
Yeah.
You know, UNC was concerned whether she was getting a good deal when she signed some grain bowl. Her and the grain bowl restaurant in Chapel Hill, there she got to go in and get a free grain bowl. We need to have an administrator, a bureaucrat, a regulation monitoring the grain bowl. Charlie Baker, like, and it's amazing. I put these things out and everyone calls me like a liberal. I'm like, this is the most fundamental. I don't even know what goes on in politics anymore. But like, this was the whole thing. No, you don't. Why? I can do whatever I want. I'm a student at this school. I am a student at the school. If I want to make a grain bowl deal, whether it's I'm a student and I work there 2 hours a day and they give me a free grain bowl or they pay me 10 an hour or 20 an hour and I sit there and say, well, the smoothie shop down the street will give me 15. Like, this is to let the kids be, they're not kids. Let the players, let the adults be adults. If they make a bad deal, tough break, sue somebody.
That's fine. You know what? Just turn in a form that says I'm getting a grain bowl. I don't have a problem with that.
But then when you know what everyone's getting, they lose the power of negotiation. Do you want every person in journalism to know exactly the details of your thing?
If they want, that's fine. I'll tell them.
Why would you do that? You can't negotiate.
You want to leave the possible.
If you go buy a car, do you want to know exactly what this other guy can do? Well, you want
to tell you this.
You want them to know how desperate you are for the car.
I don't, this is not a car dealership, but I will say that if I have a demonstrative work product, I average 18 points and 10 rebounds a game. Hey, come at me and let's talk about what I can get. And school A is going to say, well, we can give you 200,000. Well, I'll wait and see if school B says to give me 225 and school C says, oh, here's 250. That's the market I'm talking about. I don't care about cars or whatever.
Yeah, but this is going to drop that market when everyone knows you can't negotiate. You have to have secrecy in your negotiation process.
We have to be able to reserve the right to lie, is what you're saying. We have to preserve the right to lie. Okay.
You have to sit there and say, I'm selling my car, 10 grand, you can buy my car, but I have other people interested. Is anyone else interested? Or else the market will drop. If they know, yo, I'm the only guy in the last month that's come to try to buy your car. You're desperate. You drop the price. If you know there's only one person, you're selling a house, only one person has even come to this open house. You got to drop your price. You can't bluff. It's fundamental to negotiating process.
Well, my 18.10 rebound guy is going to have an agent, and he's going to help do all that work for me.
So. If they know all the money, it will impact the market. But let them have an agent. You don't need to register. Get out of the all they ever see is we must protect these people. We think we basically have no respect for our student athletes. We think they're idiots. We think they're going to get conned. We don't think they can handle basic life skills of what you should learn when you're 18 to 23 years old. And because of that, we need to know everything and we need to limit their thing. That's their problem.
Well, I think the biggest fear they have is actually the adults, the 30 plus, 40 plus who are around the kids, who are around the 18-year-old, 19-year-olds. I think that's where the fear is, whether you want to say that street agents or it's Uncle So-and-so or some kind of other person in the NIL space. I think just talking to administrators, that is their fear is those maybe they would say manipulative people around an 18, 19-year-old who are coercing them in some way. And that's just their set. I was just on the phone actually with
them. That's what they think.
Yeah, that's what.
But what are they coercing them to do?
Well, I mean, I guess you could say sign or agree to bad deals, just like the Rashada situation.
And so they and only they should come in and save these kids. Bad deals.
People sign bad deals
all the time. They open businesses that fail. They get married and divorced. They like all sorts of stuff. They buy.
You learn most when you fail.
There's consumer protections. They have the right to represent professional representation. The nanny state doesn't work. It's the inherent flaw of this whole thing. It'll never end. I get it. They think their athletes are idiots. They don't. They actually, no, we think we love our. Well, why don't you let them go? Is nobody is running around asking some engineering student who's working as a bar back on the weekend how much money they're making? And are you getting paid? Did you get your share of the tips?
Well, yeah, I will. I'll say this: if the engineering student is working through the university to make money, like he's
again,
got a
employ
job,
him. Employ him.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
You cannot have the government come and say, I want to know all the details of your, like an organization to do that, unless you're that's just why they lose.
Yeah.
Like, make them employees.
Well, they don't want to do that. So if they're not going to make them employees, they have to start. This clawback is what it is. I don't believe Charlie Baker at all. We really believe in the consumer. He's a very smart guy who spent his entire 60 something years or whatever. I'm sure he wasn't when he was 5 years old, but however many years is his career expounding on free market principles. And then he's sitting on CBS declaring, just trashing free market principles. Like, all right, new guy's the old guy.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, maybe he has read the room, and that's the way he reads the room. As you said, I think the NCAA may be changing him more than he's changing the NCAA. But that shouldn't come as a shock, because the NCAA president has not been a very powerful position for quite a while.
It is not. All right, let's end. You got anything else, Ross, on this?
Oh no, I was going to say, And we talked about it about a month ago when I had the conversation with Charlie Baker before he took over, and he went pretty deep into all of the phone calls the first, January and February, the first 2 months before he actually started, when news had gotten out. Obviously, they announced his hire back in December. So he had two and a half months of just gathering info and people reaching out. And he spent a lot of time on the phone with me talking about, the one big thing that he heard from people, and you could, Dan will, maybe he's over inflating it or whatever, but he said he got tons and tons, dozens and dozens of calls from player parents saying, saying we need more regulation. My child's getting taken advantage of, or this friend of a child is getting taken advantage of, or that's what he said. And I think that probably steered his thinking here, is the feedback that he got from what he said were players and player parents and friends of player parents, sort of thing.
I would encourage any of those parents, if that did happen, to study up on how this stuff works. I have no doubt somebody did it, but I don't. I mean, this is college. Go take an economics class. I don't know. The idea that you would ask that is absolutely crazy. But I'm sure somebody did. But that is not the way to go. And Charlie Baker is more than aware of how this all works. Look, he's got a job to do. He's going to serve at the pleasure of the presidents and all that. But this is an absolute clawback that goes again. And they know, unless the feds come in and go for this, and I can't even imagine how you would ever get this passed. I get there's like no principles to any political parties anymore, but this is where you'd go. But even then, I don't know if it would survive a court challenge. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I guess you still have to get, I don't even know how it worked, but it doesn't make any sense, at least to me. Maybe I'm the only one out there. Could be. Genius is not recognized in the moment.
There we go.
Yeah. You all come around on me later. You all come around. Be like, wait a minute. That didn't.
Well, there'll be employees soon enough.
He's running the Okie Doke.
I do think you may be responsible for drumming the words guardrails out of their lexicon. You might have done that. They've dropped that. They've moved on to other verbiage.
Yeah, we need guardrails. How about one side has to detail everything? I mean, this is not how they operate in their own thing. They literally pay a third party that tries to, there's a number of them that try to gain access to all of the salaries and everything of everybody in athletic departments because they want to know. Like athletic departments pay this these companies who have a database of what everyone's getting paid so that they don't have to get outbid. Because a lot of it's public record because they work at public schools, but the private schools they can't get. So the athletic departments are well aware of the advantage of knowing all the information in a marketplace.
Yeah.
And then sharing it with their NIL people so they don't overpay. That's what that is. All right. I want to get to this last story. This podcast gone on long enough. This occurred in Oklahoma. Speaking of laws, an Oklahoma state rep named Dean Davis. Dean Davis. That is a politician's name. 50 years old. He had been out drinking with friends at the immortal Skinny Slims. Skinny Slims, a bar in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
All right.
Skinny Slims. He was he and his friends were refusing to leave the bar, according to police. And we're on the outdoor patio, and the police came to arrest him. And he protested, told him to call his supervisors. This is all from the Daily Mail. And he told them they weren't allowed to arrest him because he, quote, privileged from arrest during the session of the legislature. He said there is a law in Oklahoma that if the legislature is in session, you cannot arrest the legislatures for public drunkenness. That apparently is not the case because as the cop said, he said, you can't detain me. And Sergeant Timothy Brewer said, I can and I am. anyway, this was, I don't care about Oklahoma politics. There was, you know, a lot of back and forth. Some people were outraged. Some people were not. You can imagine. He also had a DUI in 2019. But should we have laws? This is my question. Where at various times of the year, if you are doing some kind of work or you're in a particularly stressful time, you should be allowed to get as absolute blackout, get on the blackout train as much as you want and avoid prosecution. Like after the national championship game, should sports writers be able to just get absolutely lit and not worry about getting arrested, stumbling home?
Well, that's exactly where my mind was going.
Yeah.
The Final Four was in New Orleans last year. You know, I think we probably all could have used that exemption. I mean, none of us got arrested, but there was a fair amount of partaking. And yeah, I think that's a great rule. National championship football game, national championship basketball games. And I'll throw also in the women's Final Four there because Caitlin Clark, if you've seen her from Iowa, holy she's fun. Oh, yeah. And if you're covering that Final Four, you should be able to get blasted too. So
when you're blasted at the end, yeah.
Yeah. Sports writer amnesty after championship games.
Agreed. Also, you know, what's the harm in being publicly drunk if you're not harming others in some way? If you're harming others, you know, walking down the middle of the road, you probably maybe need to be detained. But keep to the sidewalk and don't be beating people up or anything. And you're fine, you know.
Well, he wouldn't leave the – he wouldn't leave. That was his – yeah, otherwise – I kind of like the guy's gumption, you know.
Yeah, it's worth a try. I mean,
bars closing. Ah,
it's arguable.
The legislature's in session. I gotta stay.
Wow, who says who? Says Skinny Slim himself.
He should pull the Jeremy Pruitt and say, "I'm doing my civic duty here, man."
You know? Man, just wanted to keep drinking. He had a long day of making laws.
That's right. Tough.
Yeah. Passing resolutions and motions.
Yeah.
Voting yay and nay.
Yeah. He's probably got like a good lobbyist buying him all the good stuff. I don't want to go home, man. It's stressful. I think there should be different. There should be carve outs for various professions. This is your time, right? This is your time.
Love it.
Bar has
you know
to
what?
Stay open.
I mean, think about, you know, if you're in the clergy, and we do have some clergy listeners, like maybe after the Easter Mass or something, you know, you're allowed to let loose for a while. Been a long Holy Week. And, you know? You know, go for it.
Easter night. Or,
Easter night. Yes. Yeah.
Or the bars have to open early Monday morning, right? Yeah. Like, man, just exactly.
Start running. You have your Easter meal early, you know, noon, 1 p.m. Start there. Open a good bottle.
It's like when the ship comes in from the Navy, like they've been off like the old day, you know, right? And then just like imagine the area around the dock, like, you know, pretty much anything goes. Just don't beat on each other or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Dean Davis is onto something, and
I'm cover around slims.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll monitor the situation out there in Oklahoma. All right, that's our show. We will be back later this week, and continue to share us on social media and tell all your friends about us and subscribe and all that. We will talk to you later.